Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here, and welcoming back Matt Kostelnik to the show. Matt is the senior horticulturist at Ambius in Des Plaines and has over 20 years of combined experience in the horticulture industry and teaching horticulture at the university level. So as we talk with him today, I hope you'll join in with your questions. Do you need help selecting plants for your home? Do you have questions about how to help a sick plant? Join in with your comments and questions. You can call us at 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Matt Kostelnik, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry. Good to be here.
So you talk about creating a more natural environment with plants in your in a person's home. What does that look like?
I think the type of environment that we would want to be in, you know, if you walk into a conservatory or if you're even if you're outside, like yesterday, we had really warm weather. And naturally, I'm outside. I'm amongst trees and plants of all kinds of different sizes. You know, we get tall trees, and then there's also smaller plants and grasses, and then, of course, everything in between. So to me, that's a kind of a natural environment. And I think when you're thinking about plants inside, think about, you know, how tall are they? And are they kind of filling the profile? You know, don't overlook taller plants, and then don't overlook smaller plants. You know, everything to kind of span your eye that you can, you know, kind of fill in that space.
Do you group them together, do you not? What are the advantages to group plants?
Well, there's a couple advantages. I think one is as you're looking at the plants, you're seeing vertically, you know, you got plants from all the way down near the floor, all the way possibly up as high as the ceiling. And that, you know, a great visual, you know, to see that much greenery and plants and vegetations. And also by grouping plants, especially as we go into winter time, our air gets very dry in the upper Midwest, extremely dry. And it's a lot different than the summertime where the air is much more saturated with humidity. And when you do bunch plants together, group plants together, it will help increase the humidity around the plant. So the plants kind of benefit from each other because plants, most of the water that they take up into the plant, they actually release as water vapor. And so they can kind of help increase humidity. And so having a grouping of plants is going to be a good thing for the plants because they like higher humidity. They don't really appreciate this dry air.
You know, I was thinking about this. Most of the time we have our plants in front of windows. And my guess is that the tallest plants go in the back, and then the medium size, and then the small plants is probably kind of how they're arranged, or maybe not. You can tell me. But as you drive by, though, somebody outside will see the tall plants.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you can, you know, it's kind of like taking a picture of people. You know, a lot of times people are. You want them down lower in the front, and then you want them the taller kids stand up in the back. So yeah, that's typically, you know, how they're lined up because that'll help the light get to all of the plants and not just the big ones in the front.
Yeah, when it comes to tall plants, because not everybody I've had some really tall plants up to 12 foot cactus in my house where I was fortunate to have a. An exposed ceiling where, you know, that they could go that high. But there aren't a lot of options, are there? You recently wrote an article about listing 5 indoor plants, tall ones. Let's talk about those. What do they look like?
Tall indoor plants, I would say, of course, they've got the height. And typically they have some sort of branching of some sort. By far, I think the number one tall indoor plant that comes to mind for me is the Dracaena. And there's many different types of Dracaenas out there, especially nowadays. There are new ones have come about. And the Dracaenas give you the height because they are they got long stems, really long canes, whatever you want to call them. And then up on top of that, you have the leaves coming out. They also tend to make very good indoor plants. And they are not the type of plant that will just wilt like that. Dracaenas tend to be kind of, I don't want to say drought tolerant, but it's not a plant that you need to water all the time. And most Dracaenas tend to tolerate lower light conditions, which is what most of us have indoors. So that, I think that would be the biggest group. Palms are widely used indoors. There are some challenges from time to time with palms, but they definitely give that tall height and really good size, and they really make a huge impact. I mean, nothing sounds more tropical than a palm of any type. And then you have something that is actually more like a tree, and actually
ficus
is a tree.
Ficus albat.
Yes, ficus. And ficus, good indoor plant, but big on light. And this is one that if you don't have direct light, it will be challenging. The thing on ficus that I'd like to share with people is I think most people are familiar with the ficus benjamina. And that one, you know, is one that's been around for a long time, but it's very prone to dropping leaves. And a ficus benjamina tree could have thousands of leaves, and when a few hundred of those drop on the floor, it's a lot of work to clean all that up. And they will drop leaves, you know, anything. It gets a little too dry, they'll drop leaves. Gets a little too wet, you know, any little change in their environment, they're very quick to drop leaves. There is a couple other types, though. There's a Ficus Amstel King, which has got a longer leaf on it. And that one holds onto its leaves much better, and I think is lower light. It is more expensive, but I think it's a better ficus. If you could get a hold of a ficus like that, or a Ficus Ali, that's another good type of ficus. Those you're not going to have as many issues with it dropping leaves all the time.
And their look is similar to the first ficus you talked about?
Very similar, very similar. I would say the biggest difference is the leaves. The leaves are much longer. They're almost, on the Amstel King, they're almost as long as a banana, and they're kind of banana shaped, huge leaves. And I think that they kind of branch. They don't have as many branches, and so they're just kind of a little bit more open, maybe a little bit more broad, and not as much pruning as a Ficus benjamina.
Yeah, but pretty. I mean, they're nice looking plants,
yes,
for sure.
Yeah.
Randy in Plum Lake has a question for you, so let's go there. Randy, hi, thank you for calling. What's on your mind? Hi, Randy. How can we help you today?
Hi, yes. So I have currently my plants are quarantined in my inside basement greenhouse. We have fungus gnats, and it's gotten really bad. They're flying all around our heads, our faces, and I was wondering if you had any remedies to help get rid of them.
Fungus gnats.
Sure. Yeah, very common indoors. If you are looking for a natural solution, there is a nematode that can be used for fungus gnats. Nematodes are microscopic little worms, and it's kind of a long scientific name. It's called Steiner Neme feltiae, and those nematodes are mixed in with water, and they're put in the soil, kind of shower the soil surface with them, and they're very, very effective. If not something like a nematode, I would say try your best to keep the soil surface dry, because fungus gnats are attracted to a moist soil surface or a wet soil surface. So if you can sub-irrigate, you know, water from the bottom instead of the top, if that's an option, that might help. And if not, in some cases, some people may need to use a pesticide of some sort. And I've even seen some products out there that kind of look like perlite that you can put on the surface of the soil, and it kind of stops the fungus gnats from laying eggs on the surface of the soil, and it makes it harder for new fungus gnats to emerge from the soil. So you're kind of creating like almost a barrier of putting this material on the top. I'm not big into putting sand on top of the soil, which is what some people do, because I think it makes it harder for the roots to breathe and is kind of messy. But there are some products out there for the homeowners to use for that.
Thank you very much for calling, Randy. Appreciate your call. You can join in too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Talking indoor plants today with our guest, Matt Kostelnik. He's the senior horticulturist at Ambius and has over 20 years of experience in the horticulture industry. Jill Nadeau's our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Matt Kostelnik, senior horticulturist at Ambius, over 20 years of experience in the horticulture industry, as we talk with him about selecting indoor plants. I wanted to go back just to the taller plants. Umbrella plants are kind of, I'm forgetting the name.
Schefflera.
Schefflera, yeah, Schefflera. That's a nice looking plant. What should we know about them?
Very good indoor plant. And Schefflera, there are Scheffleras that are small, medium size, and some are even quite big. So you can get different sizes of those. Very affordable plant to get. And most garden centers will typically have them. So they're pretty easy to get. In terms of, there are different types of Scheffleras as well. Some of them are just straight green. Others have kind of like a goldish to whitish color in them. They come in different forms too. Some of them are more of a bush. Others are actually grown more like a column. And believe it or not, you can actually get those in trees. Scheffleras are great, great interior plants. They do like pretty good light. You know, they don't need as much as a ficus tree. And they will drop leaves from time to time, but they will also grow quite quickly indoors. A lot of times plants don't do a whole lot of growth, but Schefflera is one, especially if you have good light, it will actually, you'll see some new growth on those.
And you know, a lot of times when the plants are dropping leaves, it's my understanding that they're then forming new leaves that are more fitting, or the composition of the leaves is better fitting to the new environment.
Yeah, that's very true. A lot of times when the new leaf, so when old leaves fall off, those may be leaves that grew on the plant when it was being grown. You know, a lot of times our plants are, tropical plants are grown in Florida. When they grow a new leaf in your own home in the environment that plant is now going to stay, the composition of that leaf is different. I'm not going to get into the science of it too much, but that new leaf is now more accustomed to the type of light it now has. That's one of the biggest adjustments it makes. And it probably is going to be more tolerant to things like drier air and just not being in that tropical condition. Because where a lot of houseplants, not all, but a lot of houseplants are native to places that are very tropical. Think of, you know, Key West, places like that, that are very warm, very humid year round. And so in our house, you know, they will adjust, yes, yeah, that new growth. And that'll probably be a leaf that'll last a lot longer, too.
Let's take another call. Marilyn in South Range. Marilyn, thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I have a probably a 4 or 5 year old jade plant that just recently started dropping leaves. And it's, you know, 10, 12 of them at a time. And I'm wondering, am I watering it too much? Should I water it more? I water it and then I drain any water off. But it just, I want to stop, you know, that.
Great question. Typically, when indoor plants start losing leaves, it's usually something related to the environment. And by environment, that could be a change in temperature. It could be a change as we went into fall in the upper Midwest. You know, I don't know if you remember, it was about a month ago, the temperatures really dropped and we had a high of only like 40 degrees.
Yeah.
The air becomes much drier. That can have an impact on it, but a jade plant is more tolerant of drier air. And so I try to think, what is it that changed in the environment? Did it perhaps get too wet? You know, that can cause that to happen. Did it get too dry? The only way to really know if that happened, for me, I use a little notched soil probe. It's a little device that you stick into the soil and you give it a turn. And then when you pull it out, there's little plugs of soil that come out. And you can squeeze those plugs and see, you know, is it wet? Is it moist? Is it dry? And that's really important because it's not really what's the soil moisture is like on the top that really matters. It's really down in the bottom that matters the most, because that's where most of the feeder roots of the plant are. So a little soil probe that you can get, a little notched soil probe, you know, you could either buy them in a garden center or buy them online. If you take care of indoor plants like we do, it's a gardener's most important tool.
Yeah.
Because if they do get too dry or too wet is a real problem. And so I think that it there's a very good chance it's related to it being too dry or too wet. Which one I couldn't say for sure unless I had a soil probe.
Yeah. Marilyn, there you go. Get yourself a soil probe. Jerry in Verona, your turn. Hi, Jerry.
My experience with ficus plants has not been the same as yours.
Oh, how so?
Well, I have taken care of plants and businesses for about 10 years, and the only time I have noticed an extensive amount of leaf drop is if the plant was changed in terms of light, like from lower to medium to high and back again. And once they were established in a place, I never had a problem with leaf drop.
Hmm.
Great. You must have been doing a lot of things right then, because that's a sign it liked the care it was getting.
Yeah, absolutely. Jerry, thanks for calling. That reminds me of Ambius. Tell us a little about Ambius, your company.
Sure. Ambius is a company that installs plants in buildings, and then we maintain them. So office buildings, hotels, airports, you know, any place, malls, you know, any place that people go in public places and you see the plants inside of a building, our company is responsible for putting those plants in and then coming in every week or every 2 weeks and watering the plants and grooming them and doing whatever else is needed to make sure those plants look nice. We also do green walls too.
Green walls.
Green walls are, they're also called living walls, where plants are grown on a wall.
Mm-hmm.
And we install the actual structure for the green wall, and then we put the plants into the wall, and then we maintain those. We water them and we fertilize them. And the goal is that those plants will stay there as long as possible. And green walls are interesting because they're vertical. So they're a little bit like almost like a billboard. And, you know, it's sometimes companies or people will put their own logo into that with different types of plants.
Sure.
But you get a very good visual vertically of seeing all the plants. And they've become quite popular in the last more than 10 years, I would say in the last 15 years. So I think green walls are to stay because they just keep, you know, people keep wanting more and more green walls.
Do you ever see them in, of course, you don't work with, typically, with residential homes, but are they starting to appear in residential homes?
Sometimes. The ones we see the most in residential homes are green walls that are about the size of a picture frame or a piece of artwork that might be on somebody's wall. And that's something that, you know, is easier to install in a home and easier to maintain.
Yeah, that makes sense. Mike in New London, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Mike. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. My topic is a Norfolk Island pine. I received it as a gift about 20 years ago, and it was probably 18 inches, 2 feet tall, and it has since grown to thrill my wife that it is now about 8 feet tall, including the pot, which is maybe 8 inches of soil under it. In any case, it's about 8 feet tall. It's on an east-facing window, which is the window is probably 7 feet that could give light to the plant. So I'm concerned. It's, you know, in the last couple of years, it grew this last foot, and it still appears to be putting on height. I'm concerned now with that part of the tree not in any direct light. It's just getting light from the room. Is the prognosis, should it last, or do I need to somehow get it so the whole height of the tree is in the sun? And any other comments you'd have? Thank you.
Sure. Yeah, that's very common with Norfolk Island pines, that people will get them as a small plant and then, you know, have them grow up into a very large plant. My mother had one for, I don't know, 10, 15 years, possibly more than that. I think I had one for a very long time as well. I wouldn't say that the entire plant has to be in direct light, but it will always be beneficial for the entire plant to be in direct sunlight. I would say that if it was mine and the top part was not in direct light, I probably would leave it for now. But if I notice the top part struggling or just not really growing at all, you know, just staying very, very small, then you can cut that back. And that will not kill the Norfolk Island pine. Ironically, it's actually not even a pine, believe it or not. But you can, and when you cut that back, if you need to, just cut it back to where there's other branches. We call that a node. So on a stem, you basically have two parts. You have the node, which is where other things are growing off of, which is typically other branches or leaves. And then you have the inner node, which is just the space, the stem where there's, you know, it's just the stem itself. Cut it right above the inner node if you decide to cut that back. And sometimes you actually might start getting a little new growth from that point. And if you don't want that new growth, you could, you know, you could cut that at the same spot.
Yeah, there you go, Mike. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Do they take a lot of, I don't know, fertilizer or special care, the Norfolks?
Not really. I would say, you know, a moderate amount of fertilizer, nothing, you know, unusual. They do appreciate the light. They are, you know, fairly low maintenance. I would say the best thing for them is, you know, the more light, the better, the faster it'll grow. And they do like higher humidity. I know it's hard to get, but if they are in higher humidity, I think you'll find that the leaves will stay on longer. They won't shed leaves as much.
Talking today with Mike Kostelnik of Ambius about indoor houseplants, you can join in with your questions or comments. Question about a plant, maybe you got a sick plant you want to comment on, or maybe you're interested in which ones would work best under your conditions that you have in your home. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. Call in, we'll get you on pretty quickly. Let's go to James in Wausau next. Hi, James.
Hi. I'm just calling in. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, James.
We have a tall plant, and we have 10-foot seedlings, and it's African milk tree. It's euphorbia. We've had it, those trees for maybe 20, 25 years, and they have spines and a white sap that's rather toxic to the skin. But that's the only disadvantage. They're very easy care. And when they get too big, you just take a cutting, start a new one, and start over again.
Yeah, and the name of the plant, again, you broke up just a little, James.
It's African milk tree.
African milk tree. Okay. Matt, are you familiar with that tree?
No, I am not. But I want to research that and see what it's all about. That sounds really interesting.
Yeah. And here's James had them for 20 years and and still going. Must have some really good growing conditions for it. We'll look that one up. Thanks a lot, James, for calling. Sue and Baraboo will go to you. Hi, Sue.
Hi, thank you. I have an ivy that the leaves are turning yellow. I've tried a number of different things. I've tried to repot it. It was very healthy earlier in the summer, and I'm aware of, like, when you bring it inside, but it just keeps, the leaves are yellow. I don't know if the size of pot is not correct or not fertilizer. I'm not watering it too much, but am I watering it too little? So any advice on just a plain green leaf ivy? I don't have the exact name of it.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I would say the two big things that I always look for first and foremost with any indoor plant is light and water. So, you know, ivies generally, I'm assuming it's English ivy, doesn't need a tremendous amount of light, but it does need some. So if it's in a room that has no windows, I would definitely put it in a room that does have windows. But it doesn't need to be right in, you know, direct sunlight. Just make sure it's getting some direct indirect sunlight. And then as far as the watering goes, it would be hard, you know, yellow leaves, the most common reason we typically get yellow leaves indoors is either the light is too low or the plant has been underwatered or overwatered. And that goes back again to the soil probe. You know, it's the best way to know, you know, sometimes, you know, some of us in the trade will just also just lift up the plant, you know, and if it's real lightweight, then I know that that plant, you know, if it's as light as a feather, it needs water. So it may be that, you know, it's using the water faster. And it's also acclimating. You know, if it was outside and it's come inside, that's a big change for a plant. Sometimes one thing I'll recommend to people, I think taking plants outside can be really great for house plants or really any plant. But when you bring it back inside, try to make the transition smoother. And one way to do that is when the plant's still outside for maybe a couple weeks, put it in a shady spot. So like the north side of the house, or if you have a porch and there's plenty of shade there, that will help that plant start acclimating to going back indoors again. And that way it'll be a smoother transition.
Sue and Madison had a ficus plant, ficus tree in the house for many years, bring it in and out, and they're having a fight with what seems to be a combination of a tiny scale insect, a small brown hard adult, white babies, and probably spider mites webbing occasionally present. The tree is so large and heavy, it's getting difficult to move outdoors for treatment. They've tried spraying well outdoors with water and then spraying half water, half alcohol solution on the leaves. They've tried systemic treatments in the soil and horticultural oils, manual dabbing with alcohol with Q-tips, and scraping the brown scales off. But the problem persists. I'm wondering if you had any ideas.
Yeah, it looks like they've done just about everything there.
Yeah.
So scale is a type of pest. And when they said white babies, it makes me wonder if maybe mealybug is a factor too. A mealybug is a type of soft scale. And scale is a pest that when they're born from tiny little eggs, and when they hatch, when we think of scale, we think of something that is a lot like a mussel. You know, it's just like it's something like a turtle in its shell, except it's attached to the plant. But when the scale are young, right after they hatch, when they're juveniles, they're actually very mobile and they're moving around. They're very small. They're nearly impossible to see with the naked eye. But that's the stage of life where they're very vulnerable. When a scale becomes an adult, what we actually see, it's attached to the plant and it is covered and protected. And at that stage, it's very hard to do much of anything to the actual scale. So what I would recommend, and it's not always easy, but this would also work for the spider mites. I would recommend insecticidal soap or, you know, whatever type of product you want to use that's labeled for scale and mites. And I would spray it at 10 to 14 day intervals. So, yes, treating it outside is going to be a lot easier and not as messy. And so if you, you know, weather's actually still warm enough to do that. So you could treat it outside, you could treat it inside, but your best bet is to put up some tarp or something for all that overspray. And then I would do probably three treatments, again, at about a roughly 2 week intervals. And I think that that would really help. And then keep a close eye on it. And then you may need to go back to do another series of treatments, but stick to that. Do the three treatments. You know, the mistake I think a lot of people make is they'll only make one treatment and then that next generation hatches and then the problem persists. So be persistent and you can get both of those pests under control.
Carol in Eagle River, we're on to you now. Hi, Carol.
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, what can we do for you?
I've got an Australian umbrella plant. I can't remember what he called it. But can you prune it and how? It has a new shoot at the bottom, and it's about 8 feet tall.
Okay. Yes, you can improve. You can prune Schefflerias or umbrella plants. They're very good to prune, and they're very forgiving, too. But, yeah, you can definitely do it, and I would, again, cut it at a node, you know, just right above where other leaves or branches are coming out.
All right. There you go, Carol. Thank you. Liz in Middleton, on to you now. Hi, Liz.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, I have a Schefflera. It's an indoor plant. It's about 3 or 4 years old, and the leaves are turning splotchy, like yellowish green, and they're just dropping off. I'm wondering what's, and I water it once a week.
Okay. Did it start doing this just recently, like in the last month or so?
I think it's been going on. It started just for a couple leaves. Now it's increasing. So, yes, I'd say for sure since summer.
Okay. Some of it could be the fact that, you know, it seemed like summer just came to an end the last day of summer. And then we went right into fall. All that heat and humidity just disappeared. And then we had a period where I think it was like middle of October where the highs were only about 40 degrees. I think some of it might be related to that. The other thing I would pay very close attention to is the watering. And I would only water it if that Schefflera needs it. I try not to water plants on a schedule because if I do, I may be watering that plant too soon or too late. And, you know, the plant only wants the water when it needs the water. More people kill indoor plants by overwatering than by underwatering. So, again, go back to the soil probe. And if you can use one of those, I think that's your best bet to stay on top of the watering, because that's what we have the most control over is the water we give that plant.
And that's pretty much the name. I mean, when you go to the store to look, a soil probe is what you're asking for or looking for, right?
Yes. Yes. Soil probe. And in our industry, there's one that's very common. It's called Soil Sleuth. And it's actually a plastic one. And it's got really good teeth on it. Sleuth is spelled S-L-E-U-T-H. But it's very good. You know, it's just a piece of plastic. It's got really good little notches that are really good at pulling that soil out. And, you know, we use it. It's like we got it right on our belt buckle. You know, it's always there. Very lightweight, very easy to use, and worth its weight in gold, I think.
Yeah. Liz, good luck. Thank you. Marit in Wausau, we're on to you now. Hi, Marit.
I actually just planted a small little living wall, and I have a couple concerns. So I put it's in a room with really large south and west facing windows. So there's three different windows. It gets indirect light. I went with a prayer plant, an umbrella plant, which was kind of a risk because I think that needs a little more light, a bromelid, and a bird's nest fern. Now, the other question I have is it has a self-watering feature. And I tried it, and the soil has been wet for almost 2 weeks. So I'm thinking that may not be the best option is the self-watering, and I maybe just want to just pour like a little bit of water in and let it dry out. So I guess that's kind of my question, watering and sun.
Okay. So on the watering, when you say it's self-watering, is it like electrical? Is there like a pump that turns on and waters?
No, it's just a little, it looks just like a shoelace that sticks out of the bottom of the pot.
Okay, I got you. So if the plants are too wet, it sounds like they're being sub-irrigated. And that is a very good way of sub-irrigating. What I would do is let that water go down and let it dry. You know, the reservoir that water is in, where the shoelace is in, let it go all the way down and wait until you fill that up again, until the plants actually need it. So when the plants, you know, the plants that you listed, you know, bird's nest fern, prayer plant, those don't like drying out very much. So, you know, when the soil gets to maybe moist to moist dry, then I would fill that reservoir back up. And then in terms of light, the plants that you listed, none of them are particularly highlight plants. It sounds like you probably have enough if you have a south and west facing windows. And the bromeliad, that is a plant that typically doesn't last, you know, for more than a couple months. That's usually one that typically gets replaced after a while.
Oh, all right. Mara, thank you. Good luck. Appreciate the call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org, talking about selecting and care of indoor plants with our guest today, Matt Kostelnik, senior horticulturist for Ambius. Over 20 years of experience in the horticulture industry. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at indoor plants today on Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Matt Kostelnik of Ambius of Des Plaines, Illinois. Great to have him back, and certainly I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments. You can email us, by the way, and even photos, if you'd like, to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org, or phone at 800-642-1234. Connie in Portage. Hi, thanks for calling, Connie. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. I just wanted to tell you the good luck I had with my spraying my Mandevilla. I went to Edgewater in Portage and got this bottle of stuff, and they told me to soak the plant because it was completely bare. I brought it in from outside. It had scale and mealybug or something. Well, I soaked it, and I did it 10 days later. I soaked it again, and in less than 2 weeks now, I have little green leaves shooting up, and it's just beautiful.
Oh, Matt, want to comment on that?
Oh, that's really impressive. That's
you don't remember Connie, do you remember what you used?
I can call you back, Larry. I'm in the car now, but I just went in there and told them that I had scale and some kind of a mealybug or something, and they told me what to do, and I put it in the south window in the house. And I'm so impressed. These little leaves are just adorable. They're just popping out all over.
We'll say that south window is a huge help. That, you know, especially this time of the year from now until about the beginning of spring, the you might notice that the sun is going more in the southern horizon and it's coming right through that south window. And if you can put plants in a south window, the next 6 months, they will just love that.
Yeah. Connie, great. Thank you so much for calling. Bridget in northern Wisconsin, what's on your mind?
Hi, I have a question. I took a little cutting from a trumpeter vine a couple months ago, and I've put it in some water. Now I have really good roots, and it's starting to turn yellow. I'm wondering if it would be a good time to put it in some soil and if I can keep it in the house over winter.
Yes, definitely put it in soil because that plant is going to want to start to take up mineral nutrients and things like that, and it'll want to establish itself in a type of growing medium. So water is good to start, but yeah, eventually you want to make that transition. I think you're ready to go to soil with that. And then as far as keeping it over winter, I think if you kept it in a window, you can get direct sunlight, I think that'll increase the chances of it making it until next year.
Yeah, good luck, Bridget. Thank you. Mickey in Oshkosh, on to you now. Hi, Mickey.
Hi. I was just wondering if you guys could suggest some houseplants that cats don't like. Not like the poisonous kind, but something that they're not likely to eat. I've noticed that they don't like my rubber tree plant and they don't like the rosemary that I brought in from outside. But is there anything that you can suggest that they won't eat?
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I'll say in my house, we do have a cat and I do have an orchid. And it has never touched the orchid that I know of. I think the cat might have gotten into the pothos once, so I wouldn't recommend that. But I think you're on the right track. I think it's easier to recommend that for outdoor plants because most animals in general do not like plants that have strong scents, like you said, with rosemary. And I don't know of any animal that likes any plant in the onion family. So, you know, anything, garlic, onion, anything in that family, they don't like. But I would say with indoor plants, I don't think it's quite as predictable aside from just kind of, you know, because most indoor plants don't typically have much of a an odor to it. But it seems like most animals, you know, there's an odor to it. They're just not as attracted to it.
Can keep cats out of the larger plants like a lime or a lemon tree with, I use actually aluminum foil that I scrunch up and put in the pot itself, which has kept Coco, my cat, from getting in there and chomping away.
Yeah, you know, and also just thinking of that, I think plants that are really soft, you know, like ferns and anything that's really, really soft and easy to chew on, I think they're more likely to go after. If it was a plant like a Dracaena, when you said Dracaena, I think that they would leave that alone for the most part. You know, a Sansevieria is another one. You know, I can't say for sure they won't touch it, but it just doesn't seem like the type of plant that they would go after.
Good luck, Mickey. Thank you very much for calling. Doug in Lansing, Iowa. On to you now. Hi, Doug.
Yes, I have a great big huge jade plant that I've had for many years, and I bring it in every winter. And what the thing is, I do not water it only once a month because it will rot if you water it more. And the older leaves on my plant fall off about this time of year just as soon as I bring it in. So it's not a big deal if the leaves fall off. It's usually the ones that have been put on 2 to 3 years ago, but you can water it. I just water it once a month, good, but let the soil totally dry out for extended lengths of times and help. And secondly, I had scale on mine, and I finally found, of course, it's a pesticide. I use Ortho that's got a ACETAMIPRID systemic in it, and it totally controlled the bugs on my jade plant, and I also spray it on my staghorn fern, and it's the only thing I found that actually will just take care of it, and I just spray it once a year, and it takes care of it for the full year.
Great. Yeah, yeah, I completely agree about the jade, just letting that dry out, because those rots are very easy to, the roots are very easy to rot on those if they get overwatered. So, yeah, great information.
Yeah, thanks, Doug. Appreciate it. Gwen in Duluth, Minnesota, your turn. Hi, Gwen. Gwen, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Go ahead with your question.
I have a Christmas cactus it was huge. It was like 3 feet across. My friend gave it to me, and it fell off my shelf I don't know how. But anyway, we were able to save three stems for it and leaves, and it likes where it is, or they like where they are, but they don't blossom like the big mother plant used to. It was popping blossoms all the time, like 18 blossoms at one time. And now neither of the four that were left or we retrieved have popped any blossoms. And I was wondering, is it because it's in indirect sun most of the day, but around 12 o'clock, it's got a good amount of sun. Do you think it's getting too much sun? Or I just would love it to them to blossom like it did before, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Great question. I don't think it's getting too much sun. I think the thing about any plant to bloom, there's two types of growth on a plant. Vegetative is roots, stems, and leaves. And then there's reproductive. And reproductive is flowers and fruits and seeds. And to get reproductive growth, you almost, especially a lot of reproductive growth, a lot of flowers, you first want to have lots of vegetative growth. So you want to first get that plant to grow lots of leaves. And the more leaves it grows, the more flowers you're going to get later on. Because flowers and fruits and seeds, that's a cost to the plant. The plant has to make food to make that. And all it gets in return for all of that is another generation, the next generation behind it. But blooming can be very costly to the plant. And the only way to build up enough for that cost is for those leaves to get enough sunlight to make food to produce all of that. So try to beef it up. Try to build those plants up as best you can first. And later on, you'll be rewarded with blooms later.
Yeah. And so how does she build that up?
Best thing is make sure that you're doing everything right, that you're watering the plant properly. If it needs to be up potted, pot it up in a bigger pot. Fertilize it. You know, I recommend using just a 9-3-6 fertilizer, just a typical houseplant fertilizer. And with fertilizer, the way we do it is we just use it at a very small rate every time we water. It's a very small amount, a quarter of a teaspoon per gallon, which is, you know, when you fertilize plants outside, you're fertilizing 10 times more than that. So it's a very small amount. You don't have to do it at every watering. But sometimes people forget, when did I do it last? When should I do it next? If you just do a small amount at every watering, then you'll get new growth on that. But light and proper water and nutrients should help build those plants up.
And once you get those leaves, benign neglect I've discovered with the cactus plant is a recipe for flowers. The one I had at my office was just enormous amounts of flowers, and it was cooler at night, and it turned, the lights were off at night in the office. I think that may have helped too.
Yeah, that's a good point, because the Christmas cactus is a short day plant, and so if you had a Christmas cactus, and it, you know, like let's say you left the lamp on all night. That will affect its ability to bloom. Like a poinsettia is the same thing. The reason why you see so many poinsettias, or you will be seeing poinsettias very shortly, is that growers, they're actually putting on those red bracts, the flower part right now, and it's because the days get shorter. If you tried to grow a poinsettia, you know, going into spring and summer, they wouldn't bloom, because they only bloom when the nights are longer and the days are shorter. So, yeah, make sure if that lamp is on that you turn that off at night.
Rayona in Egg Harbor emailed a photo of her plant. I don't know if you can see it. She wonders what the plant is and why it's constantly drooping.
Yeah, I'm seeing pictures of it. It looks to me like a succulent of some type. And why it's drooping, I couldn't say for sure. So it looks like it even has spines on it. It's almost like a cactus. Could be in the good chance it's a euphorbia of some type. It's a huge family of plants. and why it's drooping. I'm kind of looking at the pot. I don't know. I don't know if it's getting, perhaps, you know, if it, how old the plant is, or if it's too wet or too dry, but it is a succulent, so it's not going to need to be watered often. I would only water it, similar to the jade plant, when it, the soil gets dry. Water it well, and then let that soil get dry before you water it again. And because it's a succulent, I would try to keep that in a window and try to get as much light as possible.
Matt Kostelnik, our guest. He is the senior horticulturist at Ambius, over 20 years of experience in the horticulture industry. Our guest on Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here talking indoor plants on the show today with our guest, Matt Kostelnik, senior horticulturist at Ambius in Des Plaines, Illinois, also known by many as the plant doctor. He has over 20 years of experience in the horticulture industry and teaching horticulture at the university level. What indoor plant questions do you have? Maybe there are some strange bugs on your plants. Give us a call. What about repotting? Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. And Matt, just before we broke for news, you were talking about Matt's plants, actually. He sent a couple of photos. And his questions were basically the same as those that Rayona sent from Egg Harbor with a photo of her plant. And I wondered if you could identify it and maybe talk about why it might be constantly drooping.
Yes. So I see the picture we have from Egg Harbor appears to me to be a type of ginger. And not a real common indoor plant, but sometimes you see them inside. I think the main thing going on here is the that it's in low light, or, you know, it seems like it's enough light, but for a plant, this particular plant, I don't think that it is. And I say that because if you look at the stems, the distance between one leaf to the next is pretty far, meaning that it has a really long internode. So the distance from one node to the next node is very long. That's stretching. And plants will stretch in the wild because they're trying to get to more light. That's what they do in a forest. If you ever look at the way a tree grows in a forest, it looks different than the way it would grow if it was out in the middle, you know, out in the open. And it's its last ditch effort to just keep stretching and stretching and stretching until it gets to the top and actually gets some light. So I would get that plant into a window and try to get growth where it's not stretching as much. Because when a plant stretches, the stems are weak, and the petioles, the distance, the what connects the leaf to the stem, are really long and thin, and they're not very strong. And those fall over real easily. So I would try to get that into a window. And then as it starts to grow, I would then start cutting back where I don't want, you know, where the growth is too long, where it's drooping over the most. And again, cut back to a node where a node on the stem.
Let's take another call. Pei in Stoughton, we'll go to you now. Thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Hi, it's Pat. I have a question about a split leaf philodendron that we've had for over 40 years, probably 45. I have potted it once and never repotted it. It's very prolific when it comes to new growth, but now it has yellow spots on some of the leaves, and I'm wondering if you can tell me what that might be.
Yeah, yellow spotting is tough. It happens on a lot of indoor plants, some of the hardiest indoor plants, we get spotting. And spotting is almost, I've never seen it where it's caused by a disease like a fungi or a bacteria or a virus of some sort. I don't think it has anything to do with that. I think the root cause of leaf spotting on indoor plants is that water and nutrients are not moving as effectively as they could. And when water and nutrients don't get to certain parts of the leaf where you see the spot, the plant can't photosynthesize and do the things it needs to do. And so it just kind of starts to die. The tissue starts to die where that spot is. But there's many different things that can cause that. In this case, you've got split leaf philodendron that's been around for almost half a century. Sounds like it's been in the same pot this whole time. Is there anything you can do about it? Possibly you might be able to, if it can come out of its grow pot, and if you could maybe with some pruners snip the roots a little bit, we call that root pruning, that might help stimulate new small feeder roots. And those roots are more effective at pulling up water and nutrients than the big bulky roots on the plant. The older the root gets, the less effective it is at pulling up water and nutrients. So maybe do a little root pruning. I'm a little hesitant about recommending transplanting because that plant, is so well established that might be a shock to it. But if the root pruning doesn't work, up potting into maybe just a slightly larger grow pot might be necessary.
Pat, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. On to Debbie now in Madison. Debbie, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm wondering if you could give me some ideas on how to keep a gardenia plant alive. I love them. They smell great. And typically, if I get it like early summer, it's dead by Labor Day. But one year, a florist told me that gardenias like cool nights and warm sun and fertilizer. And I did that really dilute fertilizing trick like you talked about earlier.
Yeah.
And I was able to keep that gardenia alive through New Year's, and then it still died. So I'm looking for, I love gardenia. My mom loves it too. I'm looking for a way to keep them alive and smelling good.
Sure. Yeah, beautiful plant. My wife has those as well. And she keeps hers outside in the summertime, and it does, remarkably well out there. Inside, the best advice I can give is to get that in a window. If you have a solarium or as close to a solarium type environment in the house, I think the better that will do because, again, the flowers on the plant and gardenias are wonderful. They smell beautiful. The plant has to have enough leaves and photosynthesized enough to produce those leaves. And the main ingredient to all of that is abundant light. And also, stay on top of the water, the watering and the fertilizing. That will definitely help it. If you fertilize, the more a plant grows, the more water it uses. So by default, you'll be fertilizing more as well if you just fertilize that small amount at every time you water that plant.
Good luck, Debbie. Thank you so much for calling. Would a grow light work or be helpful?
Yeah, there's been a lot of advancements with grow lights, and they do work. They absolutely do. There's different types out there, and they do deliver good light to the plant. Typically, the bigger the plant, the harder it gets with grow lights, the more challenging it gets. There really isn't any replacement for sunlight. Sunlight is the best. But if you can't get enough from the sun, grow lights, they can do some neat things if you play around with them. Just make sure the grow light is close enough to the plant, too. You don't want it too far away.
Leslie in Cottage Grove will go to you now. Hi, Leslie. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for the opportunity to call in. I've got a lettuce garden in the basement. All winter I grow it rather than, and I brought the plants in that were outside when it was so cold. So sure. I have this little garden growing down there, and I saw that it had tiny little bugs on it. which I kind of expected, having brought them in from outside, and I'm using insecticidal soap. Seems to work okay. This morning, though, and they do reinfest, and so I just have to stay on it. I saw a small black and gray spider in the garden this morning. Do you think that the spider will eat the little bugs?
I think there's a very good chance that it will. Yeah, I would just let it do its thing. And the only spiders that I'm aware of that really harm indoor plants are spider mites, which mites are like tiny, tiny little spiders. But yeah, I would leave it. Absolutely. There's a good chance it's feasting on the problem.
Okay, Leslie, leave it there. How about you, Carla and Cobb? What's on your mind?
Yes, I the first thing I thought of when the lady called about the Christmas cactus.
Yep.
I know they like to be root bound, so I wonder if that's a lot of her problem after taking pieces off the one that fell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was in the back of my head, and I've seen that where people take cuttings and they just don't do much. And I think you're right. You know, when they start a lot of plants, you know, when growers start plants, they start them, I guess they call them liners or plugs, and they're very small little pots. You know, you think a lot of the plants that you buy at a garden center in the springtime. And one of those little tiny pots, they got to be watered fairly regularly. But you're right. When they're small like that, they do like to be root bound and they like to be close to others. When I propagate plants, propagate means starting new ones from cuttings. I like to keep them really close together. And I think you're right. You might, with those Christmas cactus cuttings, sometimes people will put those in a flat. And then that flat, they might fill with perlite and vermiculite or some well-drained growing medium. They might even just use the, you know, like potting soil, and keeping them close together and let them. I think you're definitely onto something there. I agree with that.
Yeah, it makes sense. Carla, thank you very much for calling. By the way, you can join in too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Brooke in Eau Claire, we'll go to you. Thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Hi, Larry. I actually have a question about grow lights.
Okay.
I just bought one. I do not have good light at all in my tiny little apartment. And I didn't know if there's a timing setting on there. And I also saw that there's red and blue lights. Which lights work best for plants?
Great question. And I would love to answer this because I've worked with grow lights a lot in the last couple of years. So as far as a timer, on a lot of mine, I'll actually hook up a timer. So if the grow lights themselves don't have a timer, I will just buy a little timer of any type. And then you could set it for, I would say the average is 12 hours on, 12 hours off. That's what most plants get. You could maybe go up to, if you want more light, you know, and you don't mind having them on, you could go up to maybe 16 hours on. I wouldn't go more than that, though. You know, most plants do appreciate, they do want a dark period at night. And then as far as the red and blue lights, that's really a great question. That most of the light that a plant uses is in the red and blue spectrum. By far, they use more light. The red light is the most that they use. And red light really helps produce vegetative growth. Blue light almost has a little bit of the opposite effect. It kind of slows the plant down a little bit and says, hey, I want you to get stockier. I want you to, you know, put those leaves, make those nodes closer together, and kind of helps the plant, you know, regulate itself so it doesn't grow too fast. So if you have too much, if all you have is red light, you'll get a plant that probably grows pretty quick, but the nodes could be, you know, stretched. The blue light, the blue and the red together, you typically kind of get a magenta color, and you'll get good growth that way. But I wouldn't just go with just red or just blue. If it was only blue, then the plant would do very little. If it was just red, it would grow probably, you know, not the way you want it. The internoids would be too long. So just kind of keep it balanced. And, you know, if you then add green, if you have red, blue, and green, now you've got white light. And that's what most of us are accustomed to, is seeing light that's white. White is an equal combination of both red and red, blue, and green. So the red and blue lights, basically, they've just taken the green out of the equation.
Brooke, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Louie in Oconto, your turn. Hi, Louie.
Hello. My question is up potting. I have two plants that probably need to be up potted, but I'm not sure on the second one. First one is a snake plant. Right now, it's the tallest leaves are about 13 inches, and it's in a 4.5-inch pot.
The second, okay. Nope. Yeah. Okay. That one, I would probably go ahead and up pot that to maybe a 6-inch pot.
So you're just going small increments?
Yeah, I wouldn't go too much. I mean, you could go a little bit bigger than that, but I wouldn't go too much bigger.
Okay. And then the second one is a Norfolk pine. It's about 5 feet tall, and it's in about a 12-inch pot. And also, I got a tilting problem on it. It's really leaning.
Okay. All right. The Norfolk Island pine, you know, use your best judgment. I wouldn't say that that's in dire need of being up potted. The leaning part, is there any way to rotate it so that one side is in brighter light than the other?
It could be, but I've been rotating it somewhat, not faithfully, but you think just the rotation will kind of bring it back, or?
I hope so.
Yeah, I would. That's what I do.
Yeah. And if you can take that one out, you know, in the summer months, that might help build it up better and you know, build branches that are stronger so that it won't lean as much. Because sometimes when they're indoors, that goes back to, I've talked about stems a lot today, but when you get really long internodes, you tend to get a weaker plant that is more likely to lean or fall over. And that's usually because of there not being enough light.
And, you know, wind and other conditions play a role in kind of toughening the plant up.
Yes, very much so.
When they're outside. Louie, good luck. Betsy in Wausau.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I have a hibiscus that is about 3 years old now. It was about 3 foot tall, and it had like three different kinds braided together initially. So it's like been doing good with going back and forth for 2 years. Now this year I'm bringing it in. It's about 5 feet tall, and that it's getting all sorts of yellow leaves that keep falling off. I tried using like a soap spray on it, thinking maybe there was like bugs or something, but that doesn't seem to be working. I don't know if it needs pruning, if it's just getting too big, or help, please.
Sure. So hibiscus, they commonly get white flies, but you would notice those if it had that. Do you see any white flies of any type?
No, I see some holes in the leaves, but it was outside. So I'm wondering if those are older, bigger leaves that, you know, had something eating on it. And I don't see anything right now.
Okay. Yeah, if you don't see anything, I wouldn't worry too much about spraying it. Hibiscus is a tropical, very high light plant. You know, just imagine a plant in Hawaii, you know, in a very tropical location. It loves high humidity. It loves abundant light. If you can get that in a south window, I think that's going to be the best thing for it. And it's going through a period of acclimation as you bring it from outside inside. You know, regardless of how good a green thumb you have, that is hard on the plant. And so I would just, you know, kind of roll with the punches a little bit, try to give it the best light you can, make sure that, you know, you're watering and fertilizing. And I think that's about the best you can do.
Yeah. There you go, Betsy. Thank you. Diane in Montford. Hello. What's on your mind?
Hello. I've got a Hoya plant.
Yep.
And it used to blossom. and they had the funkiest blossoms, but I used to take it outside every year too and then bring it back in, but it's getting big. And I repotted it a couple years ago, but it's still not doing anything.
Okay, so no blooming.
Right.
Yeah, that it's hard to predict. I've actually got some Hoyas, you know, close to where I sit, and they never bloom, ever. but here's what I'll say. I think the chances of them blooming would be quite a bit higher if they were in the window. So, you know, it's that whole thing with it producing enough food, and the only way the plant produces food is when it's got the, you know, the right amount of light, the you know, the water, nutrients, when all of that's available, it has the recipe to make food and make flowers. But when it doesn't have that, you know, or it could just be in a vegetative state, which it'll remain in until it has, you know, kind of like a burst of food and energy, then it might start to flush out new flowers. But hopefully that would help. I would just try to give it more light and make sure you're watering and fertilizing properly and, you know, give it a shot.
Yeah, why not? Thanks, Diane. Diana in Baraboo, what's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just had a quick question about spider mites. I have a plant that has a few on them, and I was wondering if I need to purchase a special insecticidal soap, or can I just, what I've been doing is just using a cloth with some dish soap on it and wiping the leaves.
Sure. The insecticide, I would get an insecticidal soap at a garden center. And the reason why is the chemistry of an insecticidal soap is different from that of something like a dish soap. Dish soaps are more detergent based. They're designed to remove dirt and oils and things like that. Whereas an insecticidal soap, the chemistry of it is designed to go after pests like spider mites. So I would definitely get an insecticidal soap.
Diana, thank you very much for calling. And Matt, here we are, run out of time. I want to thank you so much. You always do such a great job, and I hope we can do this again. Appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. I would enjoy that.
Matt Kostelnik, he is the senior horticulturist at Ambius in Des Plaines, Illinois. And again, as I said, he has more than 20 years of experience in horticulture, and it certainly shows in the answers that he gives. Always great to have him with us, and we will get him back. Well, looking ahead to Monday, kind of in the holiday mood on Monday, we'll talk about holiday wines. So looking forward to that. And then there's a new book out, The Cookie Bible, and we'll talk about, after wine, we'll look at cookies. And that's at 11 on the Ideas Network. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening. Please stay with us. Lots more in store. I'm Larry Mueller.